To another episode of the Eagles Water Cooler. I'm joined by Mike and Andrew tonight. Fellas, how are we?
Happy Thursday. Happy February.
Indeed.
Yeah, doing well. Happy to talk football tonight.
Indeed. And given, as Andrew said, happy February, happy February the 4th, three-year anniversary of the Eagles winning the Super Bowl. Fondest memory for you from the Super Bowl, Andrew?
Well, Melinda and I were up in Tromsø, Norway.
That's right.
The Arctic Circle. So I can't help but feel somewhat slighted that after years of attending games and hours of dedication to the team, it took going 3,700 miles away for them to get a Super Bowl. So
we can just get you back there and they can resume that success.
I'm thinking I need to be as far away from Lincoln Financial Field as possible for us to succeed. So but no, we had that was an amazing trip, one of our favorite trips that we've ever taken, and just so happened to coincide with one of the best sports moments of our lives here. So that's my memory. Mike, where were you on that Super Bowl?
Yeah, well, Chris and I were together. I think we went to Con Murphy's, and we had rented rented the spot out, and we had like an all you can drink, all you can eat menu, which was just absolutely perfect for the Super Bowl. Really, yeah, dive in. Plus, I packed a 12 pack of Coors Light just in case we won. We were ready to charge Broad Street and get around City Hall. In thinking about it, the best moment was the last play of the game when that ball finally touches the ground and you realize that they've won it all. It was the best feeling ever. And immediately we grabbed the 12 pack of beer and we jetted towards City Hall. And there were so many people, we all lost each other instantly, but all good vibes around there. Chris, what about you?
Yeah. Such fond memories. I guess to zoom in on the game, for everything that's happened since, that first Alshon catch was just epic. You just had such a dominant feeling after that. I remember the Philly special very clearly. I remember turning to our friend John and saying, they're going to win this game. You don't pull a play like that and lose a game like this. So that was big. Defensively, two things, both revolving around Brandon Cooks, who took a beating in the short time he was in that game. The first was him trying to leap over Rodney McLeod and Rodney McLeod like suplexing him. There's a really funny YouTube video with JR from WWF or WWE now, I guess. His commentary in the background of going like the suplex.
Oh, God.
And then another moment where Cooks had caught a ball in the middle of the field and sort of turned to run the opposite direction. And Malcolm Jenkins just came through and just ran him over. And the performance of Corey Clement in that game, for as much as he's sort of fallen by the wayside, that catch and run down the sideline, his catch in the end zone, just so many highlights, and really, yeah, like Andrew said, one of the greatest sports moments. So it's hard to believe it was 3 years ago, because with the state of this team, you would think it was decades ago, but things change fast in the NFL. And one of those changes, this most recent change, since we had a podcast episode last, Doug Peterson was still the coach then, if I'm not mistaken. And since then, he has been let go. And after an extensive coaching search that was, I think, over a week, the Eagles hired the Colts offensive coordinator, Nick Sirianni. And he comes with some cachet, having worked in Kansas City, having worked in San Diego, having worked with Frank Reich in Indianapolis with the Colts. He had an introductory press conference, which made the news in more ways than one. Let me just sort of send it around here. Maybe we'll start with Mike. Your impressions of Nick Sirianni so far?
From his press conference or just like all together?
I guess his a combination of his press conference and the resume that's been made public that he's sort of been hired on.
Yeah, I guess I'll start with his press conference. I mean, he looked nervous. He was pretty shaky out there. He was kind of like tripping up on different words, and the way that he was talking was kind of very choppy and broken up. And you could tell he was nervous, and he was kind of thrown into a heater situation, not giving an excuse for him. But I mean, part of me kind of felt bad for the type of environment he was taking the reins over with. But in terms of overall, from what I heard about the guy, you know, the way he wants to build a football team is, you know, he said his number one thing is connecting with the players. There's got to be that connection in order for there to be any type of teaching or learning that needs to go on. So fundamentally, I agree with the things he's saying, and I think time will tell. I am a little nervous about his age being so young, and he's built a really young staff around him. Given the state of where the Eagles are at, I'm really interested to see how he's able to lead the team, you know, with not as much age and experience in the coaching staff.
Yeah, but I think the age factor is big there. I'm glad you brought that up. 39, right? I think he is. But he's had a pretty extensive football career, played in college at Mount Union out in Ohio, comes from a football family. Dad was a coach. Both brothers are coaches. And he's had some experience with three different teams and with a variety of quarterbacks that include Andrew Luck, Philip Rivers now, Jacoby Brissett. You know, he's had some experience with quarterbacks, which is definitely a need, I'm sure, that the Eagles were hiring on. Andrew, what's your take on Sirianni, both press conference and resume?
Yeah, I remember, Chris, you and I were texting about the coaching search, and I think we were talking about Deuce maybe getting an opportunity and Benemy out there, and as long as it wasn't Josh McDaniels. And then I remember texting you saying, and this Sirianni guy seems to be picking up steam. And I think it was like, you know, 3-4 hours later, and they had given him the job. So I feel like I'm still vetting him almost. His resume certainly speaks for itself. A lot of success under really good coaching, head coaching and good staffs, and what he's done with, like you said, Phil Rivers and some other quarterbacks and even some wide receivers and some good route running. And so that all felt really good. And then the press conference came, and yeah, I think it dampened your spirits a little bit. He's clearly not, you know, a Sean McVay type, young, charismatic, energetic kind of guy. But as Mike said, that is a tough situation. You know, he's coming from Indianapolis, who, how many reporters after a game did they have? Four, right? Five. And then he's coming to Philly, first day, announced as a head coach, kind of thrown into the fire a little bit, and there's, you know, 45 questions. And so understood that it's nerve-wracking, but it definitely didn't do him any favors. But I think we can look past that. That's irrelevant in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. I was gonna say I saw Sirianni catching a lot of heat, and I didn't really think it was warranted, because I do think we need to give him a little bit of a leash with that first press conference. But Tyrone on 97.5 is grilling him for lying to the Eagles fan base about the question. Have you him saying he hasn't thought about whether Carson Wentz or Jalen Hurts would be the starting quarterback. And he's like, of course you've thought about that. That's one of the biggest interview questions that the Eagles would ask you going in the process. Yeah. Don't start out with this fan base by lying to them. And
it's not a lie. It's not a lie.
I see where Tyrone is coming from. I'm with Andrew. I don't think it's a lie. I don't think this press conference was intended to be information rich, especially when it comes to personnel. I think it was more introducing him, what's your scheme, what's your experience. But he was up there. Let's just talk about it for a second. He was up there like it was a award show speech, thanking everybody, you know, up and down the line. And I get that's what you do when you get in those kind of positions. But part of what was upsetting is the Eagles' coaching search was long. It was 10 days or something like that. Then it was another week until he did the conference. He's up there on his own facing probably a computer monitor. Howie's not there next to him. If I'm the Eagles, I try to prep him a little better. I have Howie next to him. Maybe I have Jeffrey Lurie keep his statement a little shorter and just say, look, I'm just here to sort of introduce Coach Sirianni. So to me, everything that's been said is true. He was absolutely nervous. I do think he settled in a little bit more. If either of you guys are interested in seeing sort of what he's like with players, there was a mic'd up segment that was done with the Colts that was floating around Twitter and Instagram. Yeah, Andrew.
Yeah, and to that point, Chris, I think what's come out also since it was we heard a little bit before, but even after this press conference and the negative reaction to him, every former player and coach has spoken so highly of him. I think just a couple hours ago, Neim Hines came out and was like, yeah, I listened to the press conference or I heard it, but, you know, that's him. He gets a little nervous when he's really excited and energetic. He kind of stumbles his words, but man, he made me a better player. He was a great coach. And you've heard that time and time again. So I think that stacked up with his, you know, what he looks like on paper versus what he was at the press conference. I mean, I think you can still remain positive about the hire, but also, you know, with levels of skepticism. But we had the same thing with Doug, obviously, when he came in. He didn't hit a home run in the presser either. And you were like, what? And he had less of a, you know, successful background, I think.
Absolutely. Much less of a resume.
Coaching-wise, I should say.
Right. And we're quick to jump on, you know, the press conference content, whether it's Doug or, you know, to switch sports, Charlie Manuel, that we thought a certain way about him. And obviously those are two coaches that were really successful. So we should sort of pull the reins back a little bit with our judgments. But, you know, part of the reason that Sirianni was hired was because of his experience with quarterbacks. The other thing that was, according to Jeffrey Lurie, a big part of the selection process was the staff that he was looking to build. So Sirianni has the experience we've talked about, was a college player, I think at the D3 level, but was not a pro, but has worked with, as Andrew mentioned also, not just quarterbacks, but also receivers, and brings some offensive concepts here that hopefully will be a little bit different. He is younger. He seems to be hiring a staff which is younger. So one of the carryovers he brought with him from Indy is Jonathan Gannon, who was the DB's coach for the Colts. And the Colts cornerbacks especially were the fourth rated unit in the 2020 season. They were tied for third in the league with 15 interceptions, four of which were pick sixes. This is a guy who comes with a good amount of cachet. Supposedly there were multiple teams that were interested in hiring him as a defensive coordinator. I think we're fortunate if that's the case that Sirianni has this connection with him. And he comes in with, you know, some things at his disposal, as the defensive coordinator, but it does sound like he's going to remain in a 4-3, that's the system that he runs, and that he operates with a little bit more of the cover two that Seattle used to run in the Legion of Boom type days. So he's another young guy. He's 37 years old. He's had some experience all around the league. It's crazy because both him and Sirianni, not that old, but have really put in a lot of time already in the league, starting off as quality control or assistant coaches and just sort of working their way up the chain. So you have to hope that pays dividends. But just on the age thing for a second, I kind of was waiting for the Eagles have hired a Jim Caldwell or, you know, someone else, a little bit of an older guy with some pro coaching experience at the head level. And I'm still kind of waiting for that. I wouldn't be surprised to see something like that happen. But on the subject of, oh yeah, right. And Shane Steichen is going to be the offensive coordinator who was from the Chargers. And I guess Sirianni knows him from his time there. He's 35 years old. So really a young core of staff here in the mix. And one of the more recent hires, to speak to Mike's point, Sirianni was questioned about the quarterbacks and who he's going to go with. And I think Howard Eskin was even bold enough to say, who's your starting quarterback on day one or on game one. And so I think all of us are curious to see what's going to unfold. And we'll talk about Carson Wentz in just a second, but the Eagles did not re-sign Press Taylor, who was their quarterbacks coach. Instead, they signed Brian Johnson, who is the former offensive coordinator at Florida. And he's going to be their quarterbacks coach this year. Now, Brian Johnson has a pretty extensive background with Jalen Hurts, has known Hurts since he was 4 years old, recruited him out of high school to Florida. Obviously, Hurts wound up at Alabama and then later Oklahoma, but they seem to have a relationship. To me, that does matter. I don't know that it's necessarily, I don't want to read into it where that excludes any chance that Carson Wentz will be here, but I think the fact that they brought in a quarterbacks coach that has a close personal relationship with Jalen Hurts matters. And I'm curious if you guys share that opinion.
Yeah, it almost feels like a hedge, right? So Sirianni was clearly brought in to be the Wentz whisperer, the playbook of Frank Reich, and try to make that work. But again, and it's tough to read through the lines, and it's tough to hear all of these stories and leaks come out about Wentz, and he's unhappy and he's demanding a trade. And I think today or yesterday was the Eagles are hoping not to trade Wentz, but they're willing to listen to offers. And so it makes you think, okay, well, what if they do wind up getting a great offer and they trade Wentz? Here you have Sirianni that was brought in for Wentz. Can he adjust and be just as good of a coach for Hurts? But maybe this Brian Johnson is there as a support mechanism, as a hedge, where if Hurts gets the nod, then you kind of have Brian Johnson calling more of the shots in that capacity. I don't know. It's all very confusing to me. Mike, how do you feel about all this?
Yeah, no, I like that take on that, by hedging your bets. You know, you kind of have Sirianni, like you're saying, as the Wentz whisperer, and then the quarterback's coach to take care of Jalen Hurts in the event you go with him. That's a very likely scenario, because I'm imagining, as part of the interview process for a lot of these things, it's how would you work with the talent that we have invested on the team? And that's a really big factor. So yeah, I second that one. Chris?
Yeah, I think there is something to it. My hope is that, as we've talked about before, I think for financial reasons and, you know, just wanting to see a player return to the great form and sort of the elite play that the level that he was at, that we hope Wentz can find himself again. But let's talk about Carson for a second. There have been a lot of reports going back to, I think, the second to last game of the year, where the Sunday Sunday morning of the game, we're seeing a press release that Carson wants to be traded, that he's unhappy in Philadelphia. And these reports have kind of been almost coming out weekly of him wanting to be traded, him not being pleased with the franchise, not having a good relationship with Doug. And obviously things have changed with the coaching now, and we're still seeing the reports that there could be interest there. So it's worth saying in the meantime that there was sort of a shocker trade just about a week ago. Jared Goff was traded from the Los Angeles Rams to the Detroit Lions in exchange for Matthew Stafford. It was quite a haul. Matthew Stafford became worth Jared Goff 2 first round picks in the future, I believe, and a 3rd round pick. So if you're a Howie Roseman, if you're a personnel minded professional working with the Eagles, you have to look at that and at least wonder what Carson Wentz's value would be. Let's just talk about that for a second. To me, Carson Wentz can at least fetch you a first round pick in a year where it would be useful to have it. I think we're all in agreement that we want to see Wentz here and, you know, return to that form that we talked about. But this has really sort of changed the tone of this situation, this trade, and then also the reports being, you know, just media stuff or being true. There has to be at least a thought in most Eagles fans' minds of, if we were to trade Carson Wentz, what would he be worth? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that pops into my head is, what if Wentz is, you know, the equivalent of Jared Goff in a trade? Are you willing to part with him? And like you're saying, Chris, maybe just pick up 1 first round pick. It would be really interesting. I think the Eagles are doing their due diligence, and they need to find out what value that Wentz holds in a trade. But just looking at the types of years that Goff and Wentz had last year, Goff had a superior year compared to Wentz, and they had to leverage him 2 first rounds and a 3rd round to get Stafford. That makes me think the market's not that great for Wentz. Maybe there's some magic dust around Wentz where people think he's still got that skill set that like is special and we can build a team around, but it's making me think the market's not as great as we think it is.
Goff also has, I think other than that thumb or whatever it was that was bothering him in that last game, he has almost no injury history compared to Wentz. So, you know, that's going to affect trade value. Andrew?
I mean, if you can get a haul like that for Wentz, I think you, I'm not going to say you absolutely have to do it, but I don't know how you not do it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's hard to turn a deal like that down.
I'm troubled by the fact of what we gave up for Wentz in 2017. Or is that 16?
16? That was 16, yeah, when they 16. Drafted him,
yeah. Yeah, I'm actually looking at it here. We had to do two deals for that. We flipped our number. We got the number 8 from the Dolphins. We gave them our 13th pick. And then we also traded Byron Maxwell and Kiko Alonso. That's not bad. But then we also had to flip that. And to get the Browns' second overall pick, we gave them our 8. And then we gave them a 3rd-round pick, a 4th-round pick, a 1st-round pick in 17, and a 2nd-round pick in 18. So, I mean, I still think that is not clouding judgment, but I think that hangs over what to do with Carson and this earnest to hang on to him because of what they did and sacrificed, or what they think they did and sacrificed to get him.
Yeah, so that's a great consideration.
I think it weighs heavy, but I also think if they're willing to listen to offers, then you know, a package that was involved with Goff and Stafford, I think is the package that maybe you don't expect for Wentz, but I don't think you shy too much lower than that.
And as lopsided as the contract is, every contract, every player is tradable. We've seen so many examples of that come up. Mike, you had a point.
No, I was just going to say, if that's the case and the Eagles have more than just the dollars invested in Wentz, it was the commitment that they made to move up twice, as Andrew just, you know, outlined. Do you think, ultimately, my hunch is that that will be more than whatever value they would get in a trade for him. It just makes it seem hard for them, another team, to package an offer that would make it sexy enough in order to take it.
Unless it's a team that has, you know, like Indianapolis, that has some knowledge of Wentz through their coaching personnel that might feel really confident about getting him back to that level. But you guys are sort of narrowing this a little bit in the sense that, you know, league-wide, he might not have the value that we would first think, or the value that we could trade him for might not equal or outweigh the value of what we gave up just to be in that position. I mean, we went through some you know, we were kind of draft poor for a few years just as a result of what that deal cost. So the other thing as an Eagles fan, despite the excitement initially, is that if they were to trade Carson Wentz, that's one of two things: either a ringing endorsement of Jalen Hurts, which, again, I'm going to go back and say, I do think the quarterback coach hire is an endorsement of Jalen Hurts, but it's either that or the Eagles are planning to draft a quarterback. So we're not going to entertain the drafting a quarterback situation because that's probably its own podcast, but we've talked about him already. I'm curious, Andrew, how do you feel as an Eagles fan rolling forward with Hurts? If all of a sudden Carson Wentz is traded for, let's say, a worthy sum, I don't think it'll ever be enough for what we gave up, but he is traded, let's say, to an Indianapolis, a team that knows him a little bit, and all of a sudden he's out the door, he's been traded, and now you've got a couple more picks and Jalen Hurts as pretty much your only quarterback.
I don't love it, to be honest with you, but I guess there's worse cases out there. Hold on.
Yeah, I think that's fair. My first reaction is right aligned with you. There was too many things I saw that were concerning in Hurts's play, as much as I enjoyed watching him. And he did get a great win against the New Orleans team that he had no business beating. It's really hard to imagine, but I could see myself learning to like Hurts, learning to like his game. And that, depending on how the team was built, that he has a skill set that's functional. It's different than Wentz's. He's a different kind of player, but I think I could learn to live with it. It would just take a really good team around him. He's not my favorite type of quarterback, I guess I'll put it that way, but he is a more than serviceable quarterback with big time game experience. And we saw a little bit of that. We saw a lot of bad too, 7 for 22 or whatever in his last game. I mean, really, god awful, to be honest. But some of the stuff that was good was really good. I mean, some of those instinct throws, that back shoulder to Alshon, that was a big boy throw as he's getting pummeled by a D lineman. There are little shreds there where you go, this could be something. So I would be okay with it. But I think, again, the ideal is that either the trade value isn't good enough or the investment is too heavy and Wentz is still here and maybe Hurts gets dealt. There are a lot of teams that are in need of a quarterback. And I would hope, not to dwell on this, but would hope that we could at least recoup a second, even if it's not an equal in terms of the pick number, that we could at least get a second round pick for Hurts, which is, you know, what we had to give up to get him at 53 overall last year. So regardless of who the quarterback is, we wanted to kind of entertain a scenario on tonight's podcast that has certain parameters. So the first is that somewhere with the Eagles having the 6th overall pick, that somewhere ahead of them, we won't know which teams, and some of them are quarterback needy, and we have thoughts that maybe some of them might go toward other players. But we've identified that on the last podcast that if we could, we would like to draft a defensive player in Micah Parsons. But regardless of who the quarterback is, my feeling is that the Eagles as a franchise are going to want to support their quarterback and going to want to support their new coach that's offensive minded. I see this pick being an offensive pick. Now, Mike, I know you have a counter to this. You've been doing a lot of DB research, and especially when it comes to the cornerback position, thinking that 6th pick could be used on Patrick Surtain or Caleb Farley. But it doesn't seem like you're buying the support for Sirianni on the offensive side of the ball. You could see that pick being defensive pick.
Well, you know, the other thing I'm thinking too, and it's something that's common, it's a common theme to the NFL. If you take a snapshot of where a team is at any given point and you make a decision about what's going to happen in the future, it's a terrible way to actually approach the NFL. And week by week, we are like, oh, we're terrible. As soon as we win a game, it's back to the Super Bowl. Like, and they're just snapshots in time. Like, it's really bad to do that. Yes, we did just hire an offensive coach in Nick Sirianni, but the Eagles are thinking about building a long-term future. And given that it's really Howie, and let's be honest, it's really Jeffrey Lurie that's pulling the strings here about who's going to get drafted, that makes me think that they would want to invest in their defense more so than just, you know, please the head coach with a new weapon. But that, you know, that's my line of thinking there.
I can appreciate that. And I also think that in terms of identity, not just from a quarterback perspective, but in terms of identity, I think the Eagles as a league presence have more of a defensive identity with players like Fletcher Cox, now with Darius Slay, Brandon Graham. I think some of the players that they have on defense, and I also think this coaching hire, the defensive coordinator Gannon, who's a DB's coach, whose DB unit was the 4th in the league last year, I wouldn't be surprised if Sirianni's a team player type guy, spreads it around and wants to give him a chance to draft one of these top corners. My gut tells me it's going to be an offensive player, but I do hear your line of thinking. Andrew, what's your take?
Yeah, I'm kind of, you know, obviously when I talked about Micah Parsons and the impact that he could have on this defense, you know, it's after watching so much film, it's tough to not want him as part of the Eagles team. But I would agree with you, Chris, where this is an offensive heavy draft and we seem to be offensively focused. So I would be surprised if we were to use the 6th pick for a defensive player, especially with, you know, 3 top wide receivers, Kyle Pitts there. I mean, even I think there's if what's his name? The tackle.
Sewell.
Yeah. If he drops, like maybe he's probably more valued than Micah Parsons for the Eagles too. So I would agree that they probably will lean offense, probably wide receiver. But as you've mentioned before, this Kyle Pitts is an interesting prospect, whether it's at 6 or, you know, floating around if we were to slide back or so.
Yeah, I mean, to go back to a conversation about identity, that, you know, when we, I think when other teams think about the Eagles, it's their defenses and their coaches, it's their defense that they're thinking about. And I think on offense, there's sort of a lack of identity. There are pieces. I would say Miles Sanders is a great piece to have. Dallas Goedert is a great piece to have. Beyond that, we don't know the quarterback situation. The offensive line is aging and we hope will come back healthy. The receivers are a big question mark and we're sort of lacking in that identity on offense. So to imagine, yeah, Andrew.
So just to that point, cause it is interesting. And I would agree with you there is a lack of identity, but does that equate to leadership? Because I do believe that even if you were to draft one of these top wide receivers or a Kyle Pitts, like, I don't think that automatically gives you an identity.
I agree.
Maybe it makes you faster, more dynamic. Clearly, our wide receiving core needs some retooling. And then with Ertz most likely gone here, you know, you're left with Goddard and that's it. So definitely need weapons, but I still don't know if that pick gives you the identity. Whereas I think if you were to draft a Micah Parsons, even though he is a rookie, that does start to give you some identity, some leadership on the defensive side of the ball. That's just a devil's advocate kind of look at it.
No, I think that's completely fair. You can't solve a team through one player, even if it is the sixth overall pick. And I think in being realistic, we need the sort of pieces to fall into place. Like one domino of the quarterback position and who that person's going to be has to fall into place before they can really truly build around. And that's, to be honest, and this is just coming to me now, maybe we do see some kind of move before the draft, because why go into the draft without a clear picture of who's going to be your quarterback and what their skill set is? I know Sirianni in his press conference talked about having two top-notch quarterbacks when other teams don't have any that they're really, behind. I mean, I think if the Eagles are really smart, they go into the draft knowing who their quarterback is, even if a trade hasn't been made quite yet, because they have some time. But Wentz's contract jumps up, and the hit jumps up a couple days into the league year, which is, I think, early March. So they're going to need to make a decision. But regardless, whoever the quarterback is, we're going to imagine a scenario tonight where the two top wide receiver prospects, Ja'Marr Chase from LSU and Devontae Smith from Alabama, are both off the board. And at six, the Eagles are looking at receiving options like Kyle Pitts, who's a tight end out of Florida that Andrew mentioned, and another wide receiver from Alabama, Jalen Waddle. And we'll talk about both of them. Let's start with Pitts, who in some research found out is a Philly guy, went to Archbishop Wood and was a high school quarterback. Is out of the University of Florida. Pitts is 6'5", 239 pounds. He's been described by the Draft Network as a true matchup problem, especially in the slot, where he causes problems for outside linebackers, strong safeties, and nickel corners because of his frame, wide catch radius, and length. It's been noted in a couple different places that he's just kind of a big wide receiver and moves like it. Without a top floor on his elevator, he's able to sky over defenders at the catch point as he enters floors they aren't capable of going to. Pitts is able to snag passes out of the air well before the ball enters into possible areas where the defender can have an effect on it. I just think his sheer size and ability, watching him, I sent a highlight video to Mike today. He's just an exciting player to watch. Kind of makes you forget he's a tight end, but for him being so big. Over his college career at Florida, 3 years there, 100 receptions, 1,492 yards, averaging almost 15 yards per catch and 18 touchdowns. He's projected to run a 4.6, 4.7 type 40, might run faster than that. Guy just seems like an athlete. His comp is Darren Waller from the Raiders, who actually was drafted by a pretty wild story, was drafted by the Ravens, had some issues, and then came back and has been one of the top tight ends in the league with the Raiders. Six would be historically extremely high to have taken a tight end. I looked this up in NFL history. There have been, let's see here, 5 tight ends taken, and really all of them within that range, almost all of them. So the first one is 1960. This guy, Billy Cannon, was the first overall pick at tight end, which is just like outrageous to think about now. In 61, the 5th overall pick was Mike Ditka. And beyond that, there are three picks, 72, 73, and 2004, that were number five overall and then number six overall and number six overall again. So it's definitely unusual, but it takes a special talent, it would seem. Obviously, Mike Ditka is in the Hall of Fame. And when you watch Kyle Pitts, you can see that he's a special player. I'm not really thinking of him purely as a tight end, but just to highlight the tight end part of his game, he's a really strong run blocker, and is able to sustain blocks, you know, against whoever he needs to, and is willing. And I think that's such a big thing for tight ends, especially pass catching tight ends coming into the league, that the first thing they usually do is ask to block. And with Dallas Goedert, I'm sure that if Kyle Pitts wound up on the Eagles, that would be part of his responsibility. So, fellas, you watch the footage. You've seen this player. Let's talk about just the player first, and then we'll talk about the value. Andrew?
I mean, the player is fantastic, right? Kind of this tight end wide receiver hybrid, as you were saying. Seems to fill multiple needs for the Eagles. I'm cautious, yes, because of six being very high to pick a tight end. But also, what does it do for Goddard, and can the two of them coexist, and what type of offensive philosophy then has to be put in place to accommodate both? Because, you know, I think he's decent at blocking. I think you mentioned that there were reports that he was great at it, but I didn't see anything like super dynamic. So if he's your, pass catching tight end, does Goddard become slightly irrelevant and become more of a blocking tight end? Is he okay with that role? This is all hypothetical, and this is just the negativity, but there's no doubt that he is a dynamic, athletic, and probably a player that can provide immediate impact. He fills a need with Ertz, again, most likely being gone. And then the lack of depth at the wide receiver position. The only other thing was, and this would be interesting, I don't actually have this fact, but what types of tight ends had success under Sirianni with the Colts, with the Chargers, because he clearly had good results with quarterbacks and I think some wide receivers, but I don't know if there has been a dynamic tight end underneath his stead, if you will. So interesting to see how it could work. No doubt that he is an unbelievable talent that will most likely go top 10. I think we've seen him go as early as four, as late as 12, but I mean, his talent is hard to pass up on, especially as you said, predicated on some of these receivers being gone. Mike, that's how do you feel? Sorry, Chris.
No, I was just going to say that's a really great point. And I think how it affects Goddard and having Goddard in the fold and what's going to happen with that. Either, I mean, Goddard we've seen is a weapon in the open field and is able to make plays after the catch and is just kind of a pure athlete. So I don't think you'd want to relegate him to just being a blocker. But if you're going to draft Pitts, whether it's at six or moving back, which is a scenario we'll explore in a little bit, to me, you're making a really strong commitment to 12 personnel because you're probably going to want the threat of both of those players as receiving options. And if Pitts is somewhere like in between being a tight end and a receiver, I think it's great to have a guy that size. I mean, the rest of our receiving core are shorter guys, Greg Ward, other than Travis Fulgham, who, had a great stretch of games, but we don't really know what he is. There's a sort of blank spot in the receiving core when it comes to size. Lots of speed there, but not a whole lot of big size that way. So, you know, if this is the Eagles' new offensive identity to play 12 personnel with two tight ends, Goddard and Kyle Pitts on the field, I'm good with it. I just think it's a really, really strong move to say, okay, this is the way we're going to cater our offense. And that would be really different if that's the approach Sirianni wants to take. Mike, what's your opinion on this?
Yeah, follow up on Andrew's point about how Sirianni uses tight ends. I just thought it would interesting since he coached with the Chargers and the Colts and is familiar with Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers has, you know, he had Antonio Gates for all those years and, you know, is the type of quarterback who had the tight end heavily involved. So I don't think that'll be an issue per se. The other thing I thought that was worth noting is Pitts is – he kind of checks the same box that Zach Ertz did in being a tight end and a receiver. But the difference between the two is, like, he's a very much more upright tight end with a lot of yards after the catch. That really stuck out to me watching his film. So he's really capable of, like, those explosive big chunk plays throughout a game, which, you know, can really be a difference maker. But I guess it really boils down to how much investment do the Eagles want to make in them. I wouldn't worry about 12 personnel because I think they'll be crafty enough figuring out how to play the guys. But, you know, Dallas Goedert has been sold to us as the new Zach Ertz per se. And I don't necessarily see the value in using that pick to take a tight end when there's all these other positions that we could use. But that's getting more into the value, not the player.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point about the formations and the idea of using 12 personnel. Also, Goedert has a significant injury history. He's had injuries each year he's been with the Eagles. So, you know, I think it's likely that even if they were to take him, that it would benefit them to have two tight ends who are weapons and one who kind of doubles as a receiver. Purely, maybe without as much of the blocking element, but I think he's an intriguing pick. I think the confusion that we're all kind of dealing with is the position, and we just don't think of tight end that way. But when you think of some of the most impactful players in the league, whether it's Travis Kelce and Rob Gronkowski, who will be playing this weekend in the Super Bowl, George Kittle. Just players all across the league. When you think of every team, there's some sort of dynamic receiving threat in the tight end. And we do have that in Goedert, but we were kind of sold on the idea also when Goedert was drafted, not just that he would be the next Zach Ertz, but that we were going to see some 12 personnel and the two of them on the field at the same time. We never really saw it, mostly because of injury. So I'm intrigued at the idea, but I think what Mike's saying is also ringing true in my mind that, you know, to have Dallas Goedert on the team, and to use the sixth overall pick on another tight end, it does seem a little bit rich. So let's explore the other option. And I don't know, maybe somebody pulled up some information on Jalen Waddle. I know from watching his tape, he's a really fast, dynamic player who makes a lot of plays in the open field, a lot of those end-around type plays, but really was surrounded by so much talent over his time at Alabama. Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, obviously this year, Devontae Smith. He's a player who's probably the fastest, maybe not faster than Henry Ruggs, but definitely faster than Devontae Smith, but probably didn't get as much of the spotlight and did suffer an injury this year. So, Mike, what do you have on Jalen Waddle?
Yeah, he's definitely a speed demon. He's measured at a 4.37 40-yard dash, which I think is maybe a touch slower than Ruggs, but, you know, that's super fast. In terms of stats, he's a junior. He's 5'10", 182 pounds. He's from Houston, Texas. I just kind of want to run you through some of his senior season here. He did suffer an ankle injury, so we only ended up starting six games, the sixth one which he got injured. But check this out. His first five games, first game, eight receptions for 134 yards. Then he's got five receptions for 142, then six for 120, and then six for 161. He's putting up monster numbers every game, which, you know, shows you kind of the impact that he has. So he's an impressive player, fast and productive.
Andrew, thoughts on Waddle?
Anybody that gets compared or comped, I should say, to Tyreek Hill has my interest. For sure, especially with DeSean Jackson, he's done, right? I'm not sure if he'll be with the squad next year, but no. you're not going to get much out of him, if anything. But it'd be interesting to see if he stayed healthy this year. Does Devin Smith even win the Heisman? Right?
Yeah. Who knows? Hearing more last year, about. After Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs left Alabama, you were hearing a lot more about Jalen Waddle than you were about Devontae Smith. So the injury does concern me, but his speed and playmaking ability, I think six is just about the right value for him. If Smith and Chase are off of the board, that I would feel okay with them taking taking Jalen Waddle. But I still go back to what I feel when I watch Kyle Pitts and what could be in the offense if that were the case. And if you're willing to look at him not just as a tight end, and I think a lot of our concept of him is sort of built up in the idea of that's just really high to take a tight end. We don't know what will happen. If that wound up being the case, it seems like we're all kind of leaning a little bit more toward Jalen Waddle. I know right before the podcast, I thought I was kind of leaning more toward Pitts, and I'm still waffling, but I can see the value of Waddle at six. I guess maybe I'll table it that way.
Yeah, I think Mike, go ahead.
I was just going to say something feels wrong about taking three receivers with the first six picks in the NFL draft. Now, that's just based off you're pulling from one position group, not necessarily looking at overall talent and need. Something just feels off about it to me. Like it's a wasted pick if they go that route.
Well, and there's so many quarterback needy teams, they may be in a position where Ja'Marr Chase, Devontae Smith, and Jalen Waddle are all there. So, you know, they may be in that scenario. I think for tonight as an exercise, we were exploring it as if Chase and Devontae Smith were off of the board. But it's an interesting scenario. And with so many quarterback needy teams, that's going to be the priority position. And in a quarterback class that's really deep, teams are going to be able to sort of have their pick. I think if it's Waddle at six, I'm okay with that. I would have preferred Devontae Smith or Ja'Marr Chase, but if they're gone, Waddle at six is okay with me. If it's Pitts, it means obviously different things for the offense, but I would really prefer in a year where the Eagles have seven draft picks and are pretty much rebuilding their team in an overhaul way, coaches included, I would maybe move back a few spots to a team that, as Mike would say, I'd try to get cute a little bit and move back and see if I can pick up a few more picks either in the first round or early second with a team that has a need. And I think most GMs are in a position where they sort of know the score and what the picks are going to be, at least within that top 8 to 10. And beyond that, it's a little less clear. But my hope is that if they chose Kyle Pitts, that they would be able to move back and maybe get him 8 or 9 instead of at six. I guess that sits a little better with me. But from everything we're talking about with Waddle, and I mentioned this before the podcast, I think he'd be wide receiver one on the Eagles today, probably. And the idea of having a player like that and Rager on the field at the same time and some of the other speed options, it really creates a different picture. I mean, if you draft Kyle Pitts, you're this two tight end sort of bruising type of offense with potential to go downfield with some of your speedy receivers. If you have Jalen Waddle, it's just like a track team. So it's a different set of weapons, and how they equip the team is somewhat going to be based on the quarterback. So there is some unknown. Andrew?
I think I share some hesitation that Mike mentioned. Not necessarily the uneasiness of three wide receivers going in the top six, but us picking Rager last year and then Waddle this year. Can they coexist on the field? Yes, they're both fast. Yes, they're dynamic. They're kind of similar wide receivers. Does that make them easier to defend? Do you have anybody underneath? Do you have more possession receivers that aren't, again, Fulgham? You saw four games of brilliance and then irrelevancy. Greg Ward is a free agent. He's your, you know, Jason Avant kind of guy. I don't think he's ever going to be that dynamic number one.
Right.
Maybe, you know, I don't think having Rager and Waddle on the same team is a problem by any means. It's just, does it work? Does it, you know, can they coexist? And that's drastically different than if you had Pitts and Rager, right? Like, as you're saying, it totally changes I'll go back to your word, the identity of the offense for sure.
And it does. And it's, I think you bring up a really good point about sort of a redundancy of talent. I think Waddle is a better player than Rager from what I've seen. And I don't think we've seen Rager's full potential, but obviously playing in the SEC and having those performances, like Mike talked about, having an 8-catch game for 130 some odd yards, You know, I think having both on the field would be an interesting concept, but to me, it's a more threatening concept to have a player like Pitts on the field. And that's what the Eagles really need is a player that imposes some kind of a threat to the other team. And I think Pitts' size alone helps to do that. But there's something about the situation, like Mike was indicating, just the idea of three receivers being taken in that top six that doesn't feel quite right. So I think we're probably left tonight with more questions than answers. But I think if we were to take either player, if Jamar Chase and Devontae Smith are off the board, which is a hypothetical, but if we were to take either player, Pitts or Waddle, that they would provide a little bit more to this offense. I think when it comes to identity, to go back to that word, Andrew, I see that more with Pitts. And maybe it's because it's a little less redundant in his skill set than Waddle would be. But it's going to be really interesting to see how things shake out here. I can't say enough how curious I am to see what happens at the quarterback position for the Eagles, because it's really going to change the landscape of obviously our fandom and watching experience for the next few years. But I've got this feeling that, and maybe we'll wrap the podcast on this, I've got this feeling that Carson Wentz has been haunted by the ghost of Nick Foles since everything went down in 2017, that ghost, you know, assumed the form of Jalen Hurts this year, and that his time in Philadelphia is done, and that it's best for him and best for the team to move on. That's not what I want to happen, because I still want to see Wentz be successful as an Eagle. I just have this feeling that I can't deny. And I think his time is up, and there's something to these reports, even if he's not leaking them, that there's something out there. Mike.
Yeah, isn't it just a little interesting that the Eagles' new head coach is named Nick? Like, if he succeeds in this town, there could be a new Saint Nick, you know, that everybody's cheering for. And that just adds to the haunting that may be deep in the caves of Wentz's brain that torment him in his sleep.
You think he was talking to Howie and he's like, hey man, so tell me about the new coach. What's his name? He goes, Nick. And he goes, you gotta be kidding me. You gotta
be kidding me. That'd be hilarious.
Hey, I mean, it's interesting to me that there's been a changing of the coaching guard also. And I think when there are changes that happen in a global way with franchises, a lot of times those changes are sort of sweeping, and the biggest positions are the coach and the quarterback. So we've already seen one domino fall. I think regardless of what the actual value is, there are suitors for Wentz, not just there would be. It's already been reported that there are some suitors for Carson Wentz. Based on this deal with Jared Goff and Matt Stafford, I'd be very curious to see what he could get you again in a year where if the Eagles have 7 picks, they could probably stand to get at least 9 or 10 to really put themselves in a situation to be properly rebuilding. Because, you know, I saw a poll up, and maybe we can end on this question. How long will it be before the Eagles can really be competitive again? And I'm obviously, all of us are in it for the long haul, but we're talking about a couple of years here, realistically. I think with a new coach, with some moving parts, maybe with dealing your franchise quarterback to another team, I think they're in a position where we're going to be in it here for a few years before we're really settled with an identity that we're really clear on. That's at least my feeling. So I don't know if you guys feel the same way in terms of just being able to be competitive.
That's a really interesting thought. I don't know why, but that just kind of made me think, like, there's so many question marks surrounding this team, all of which are out of our control. Like, you know, we can speculate, let's build the team with a tight end, or, you know, let's build it with a stud wide receiver, you know, middle linebacker or a shutdown corner. A lot of these questions are just going to get answered as things play out with the changing of the staff, the major overhaul that we've seen here. And it is building for the future. So it will be, to bring it back, I think it'll be really interesting what they end up doing at 6 to start that process of building towards that next championship team.
Right. And that there's maybe a chance that if Carson Wentz is not here, and if the confidence is not there in Jalen Hurts, that at number six, you're in a prime position to draft a quarterback as you're making all these changes and sort of shifting your identity. Andrew?
You know, going into last year, I feel like there was this commitment to getting younger, to getting faster. I didn't realize that was going to happen with the coaching staff before the actual talent on the field. When Jason Peters is he might be older than half, if not more, than the coaching staff. It's not the transition that I expected to see, but here we are. The staff isn't changing. Sirianni's not going anywhere, at least for this upcoming year. The staff that was brought in is not going anywhere. This Carson thing is a nightmare. There's holes to fill on both sides of the ball. The franchise feels like in massive flux right now. I'm trying not to get too emotionally involved because, as we've talked about on multiple podcasts, especially this one, things can change, right? If Wentz gets traded, if Deshaun Watson goes to the Jets, that could affect where we go. We could trade back. If it's Pitts, if it's Devontae Smith, if it's sliding all the way back and getting Micah Parsons, like, there are so many factors right now that can impact the way that we're going to go into next season that it's hard to feel one way or the other right now, other than I'm very uncertain.
Yeah, and maybe it goes back to what we said, you know, there's more questions than answers. And I thought that was such a great run that you just went on. I was just going to end that with go Birds. So I think maybe that's where we'll cap it. And hopefully we have more information. It seems our podcasts are falling at just the right intervals. As I said, when we did our last podcast, Doug Peterson was still the coach, and there's been a sea change since then. So probably by the next time we podcast, more to change. But fellas, good job tonight. Fun to talk a little football.
Go Birds.
Pretty combo.
Go Birds.
Go Birds.